Back on downtown, Kerry Haskell showing his sense of humor here by using Life's Been Good as the bump music for our next guest. He is a publicist, comedy historian, and the author, along with Bert Kearns, of a terrific new book entitled The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. We're pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jeff Abraham. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is really a terrific book, and I guess the first thing, and I've said it to people, it's not as morbid as it sounds, and it's actually very respectful of those performers.
Yeah, we're very proud of that fact. Even though the book has the word death in the title, we really say it's a celebration of lives of these wonderful performers who gave so much to their art.
And I understand, as you point out in the foreword to the book, that the idea came to you, of all places, at an Elvis Presley tribute concert.
And I also add to that, I have to give a little credit to Donald Trump. It was a Trump 29 casino, to be exact. we can give Mr. Trump a little credit for something. Yes, I went to see an Elvis tribute show, and part of the show was a gentleman, you don't know his name, but you know the voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building. Thank you and good night. A man named Al DeVoren, who had been with the Colonel since 1955, and after the show, he was mulling about in the lobby, and we were chatting, and someone said, Al, when are you going to write a book? He goes, yeah, I know, I have time. And we said goodnight. This was Saturday night at 10:30, and he was killed Sunday morning in a car accident. And I was thought about 12, I just saw him 12 hours ago. How could that be? And then you think about, and I was more intrigued by the stat of someone's last performance, like Hank Williams had died after a show, or Elvis had bagged or packed, you know, on the way to a show, and John Entwistle, The Who, died allegedly with hookers and blow in his hotel room while The Who was waiting to do a reunion show the next night. And then Bert, my great partner, said, you know what, I think there's enough people here who literally died on stage, and the focus of the book changed to what you now have in your hand.
Well, and some remarkable stories in there, and I could spend hours talking about them, but I want to highlight a few here. And let's start with the case of Dick Shawn, one of my favorite comics. And it's always rough when your death is confused for being part of your act.
You know, if that's any takeaway we say from the book, is don't be a comedian and die on stage, because people think it's a new part of your act. It's a new piece of business you're trying to break in. So this great comedian, as you mentioned, had been on the Mad World and the producers, but he was a very avant-garde, out-of-the-world performer. And in the beginning of the show, he would lie under a pile of newspapers and pop up. You know, so you never knew what was going to happen. So at one point in the show, he says, pretend there's an atomic blast and everyone around us is gone and I am your leader and I want you to follow me. And then almost on cue, he fell down and had a heart attack. And people thought again, you know, is there a better setup for a punchline than that? And people started to yell, take his wallet. And then his son Adam was the stage manager. And he's watching. He goes, you know, my dad normally doesn't fall in the show at that point. And if he did, he wouldn't fall that kind of hard. And next thing you know, comedy turned to tragedy. And we have a wonderful detailed account with Adam. And he's still, you know, broken up and touched by this day.
Another one that I latched onto, because we had Joe Posnanski on the show last week talking about his wonderful new book, The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini. The story of amazing Joe Burris, who tried to do the escape that even Houdini wouldn't try.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, Joe and I seem to be following each other. We were back-to-back on a podcast. He has a wonderful book out. You know, ever since Houdini died in 1926 on Halloween, people have been trying to outdo Houdini. You know, oh, if he went, you know, escaped from a straitjacket three stories up, I'll do it six stories up, and so on and so forth. If Houdini was buried alive, I will do buried alive. I'll go deeper, and I won't just use dirt. I'll use cement, and that's what the amazing Joe did. And unfortunately, it got the best of him. And we interviewed his son, and there was a perfect example. His son was very flattered, and and really appreciated that we were paying respect to his father after all these years, and really wants his father to be remembered, and not that these people should be remembered as as some cheap joke or something, you know. But it is a tragedy. But Penn Jillette told us, you know, the real secret to magic and escapes is never to do anything more dangerous than sitting in your own easy chair or bathtub.
Well, yes, and you highlight that even more by chronicling the incredibly long list of people who have died attempting to do the bullet catch.
The most famous was a gentleman named Chung Ling Su, who died in 1918, and then we have some as recent as 10 years ago. Do you think at some point the people would have gotten it right? Because I will tell you the secret. I don't know if I'm supposed to, but it's a trick. Unfortunately, some people have not mastered the trick, and there's been tragedy. And some of them have, I'm sorry to make light of it, but one time somebody came out of the audience and said, "Oh, can you catch a bullet? Try to catch mine," and shot the magician.
We're talking with Jeff Abraham about his new book, "The Show Won't Go On," and well, all of these are sad stories. But I don't know if there is any sadder to me, because I'm of that age that I remember him coming to prominence in the late '60s on Laugh-In and The Tonight Show. But the story of the demise of Tiny Tim, I found especially sad.
You know, some performers, you know, unfortunately keep on performing longer than they do due to health reasons or financial reasons. And Tiny Tim had done a ukulele Hall of Fame event, and he had a heart attack. And the doctor said, you know, you need to take a year off. You should not be working. And he went home to Minneapolis, where he was living with his last wife, Miss Sue. And he did this women's auxiliary club, you know, not a way to go out, you know, with guns blazing. And this little show, and at the end of his show, you know, he said to his wife, "I don't think I'm feeling well." He had just done his trademark tiptoe through the tulips, and he took a step and died of a heart attack.
And that was so sad, too, because much of the audience had left, and even the band that was supposed to be backing him bailed out for that performance, too.
Yeah, they didn't even know he was supposed to be there. Again, it was not the utmost. You know, some people, you say, you know, that cliche, he died doing what he loved. But in when you're dying in a woman's auxiliary club and the band could care less you're performing, I don't think that's really the way you want to go out.
You also write about one of the most famous onstage deaths in entertainment history, the famous Dick Cavett show with J.I. Rodale. But as you point out, most of what we think we know about that incident isn't really accurate.
It's the most famous TV episode of all time that no one has ever seen, because it never aired. A very good friend of mine works for Dick Cavett Productions and made a promise to me. He said, if you sell this book, I will allow Bert and yourself to be the first civilians, the first people, writers, to watch this episode. And it was always thought, first of all, J.I. Rodale was a health expert, a longevity expert. As Dick Cavett said, could you ask for anything better? and Dick has been talking about it since 1971. So for that reason, people have always felt that people have watched that episode. And it had always thought that he had finished his segment, moved over one chair, and the next guest was Pete Hamill, the journalist. And people and you heard the death rattle, which sounds like a snore. And it had always thought that Dick Cavett cleverly said, "Oh, Mr. Rodale, am I boring you?" Never was said. And had always thought that his last line was, "Oh, I could live to 100, and then he died. But again, he had finished his segment and had moved over. So we were able to literally watch it and correct so many urban legends. And even Dick, in all fairness, you know, for telling the story in 71 years, he's not like Nora Desmond watching the episode over and over again. So he may misremember a fact. So we were able to really give a detailed account of this terrible incident that no one had seen before. And it's very eerie to watch to this day.
You also write about one of the most bizarre episodes in television news history, and that's the on-air suicide by the reporter and anchor Christine Chubbuck.
Truly tragic, and oddly enough, they made two movies about her life. Yeah, it's amazing what has been captured on television, and now with YouTube, of live events like that are easily found. In fact, one of the deaths that happened on live television and does exist to this day, there's a name, Tommy Cooper, a British comedy magician, very much in the tradition of Carl Ballantyne, who we all remember from the Ed Sullivan Show. He was on McHale's Navy, and where he would do tricks, and they all went wrong. But he was on a live British variety show, and that clip survives on YouTube. It's probably the most viewed death, quote, on stage of all time. And every now and then, the Tommy Cooper Society tries to petition YouTube to take it down. So it's 200 years ago, we didn't have a record of this. But now we can go on YouTube, and these deaths have been captured.
Jeff Abraham talking with us about his book, The Show Won't Go On. So overall, the families were very supportive of your efforts to chronicle these stories?
Yeah, the only incident, somebody asked us that. I remember, I think one of the symphony orchestras, we wanted a photo, and they decided, you know, you need to get the photo from the family. They didn't want to supply the photo. But otherwise, Dick Shawn's son and the amazing Joe Jr., And we interviewed Nick Walenda, the grandson of great Carl Walenda. And they saw that we were doing this very respectfully, because the publishers wanted us to be a little snarky, but that was never our intention. And we did not do any bait and switches. Everybody, I think, would be very happy. And we wanted the reader to be engaged by this person, because otherwise, why would you care that this person had left us? You know, when you're reading this chapter, we wanted you to be engaged about this person.
Was there one story out of all of them that you researched that you found especially poignant?
You know, there were ironies in the book, and sometimes, you know, they made for a great ending, unfortunately. And, you know, Bert and I would, you know, so what's the button? And, you know, one of the agents said to us, this is the worst mystery novel I've ever read because the person dies in the beginning of every chapter. But the first entry is Jane Little, and I think it's the epitome. She was 87 years old, literally lived up to her name, trying to get the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest tenure in a symphony orchestra. And she was battling health problems. She played the double stand-up bass, which was bigger than she was. And during the encore of the symphony, she died of a heart attack. Now, that alone would be a pretty dramatic story, but the song she was playing was There's No Business Like Show Business. we smile, and she lived a great life, so you could say she died doing what she loved. But if you're young, like Dick Shawn, you know, his son Adam says, well, maybe, but my dad wasn't done. My dad had another 20-plus years in him, and we wanted to see more of him.
The Jane Little story, and the other one that I was struck by, the irony, or I guess we would say the poor choices made, the story of Albert Brooks and Bob Einstein's dad dying at a Friars Club event, and folks, was it Milton Berle who said, somebody sing something, do something, and Tony Martin sings, there's no tomorrow.
You know, we were very good about doing a lot of fact-checking and double-checking, interviewing people, and that may be one of those stories where there could be an urban legend to that, because there's another brother named Cliff Einstein. He always said Milton had always embellished his part, but it was too good. And, you know, there's another comedian named Joe E. Ross. We remember him from Bill Cohen, Car 54, and he was performing in a rec room in a little retirement village apartments. And he died in mid-performance, and his wife went to collect the performance, and they only gave her $50. And he said, wait, he was due $100. He goes, well, he didn't finish the show, so you're only getting half the money. And I could probably tell you 10 comedians who would say, oh, I was there that night. I remember when it happened. And it was just too good a story not to put in the book.
The book is called The Show Won't Go On, The Most Shocking, Bizarre, and Historic Deaths of Performers on Stage. It really is a celebration in many ways of these artists, these performers, and the whole entertainment business. I enjoyed reading it so much, Jeff. It's been great to talk with you. We wish you and Bert great success with the book.
Thank you so much. Truly a pleasure, and thank you for supporting my clients over the years. And I wish you guys a happy Halloween.
Thank you. You too. It's Jeff Abraham with us here on Downtown.